So the MLS salaries are gradually going to be cut. A lot of you think this is a good idea. Maybe the MLS don't. Is this unfair or is it fair? This is what Karen Bradley had to say yesterday.
Northern Ireland needs devolved government. It needs all the functioning political institutions of the Belfast Agreement and its successors.
La, 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 la. We're busy doing nothing, working the whole day through, trying to find lots of things not to do.
As this impasse continues, the people of Northern Ireland are suffering.
La, 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 la,
local decision making is urgently needed to address this. The only sustainable way forward lies in stable, fully functioning and inclusive devolved government.
Busy going nowhere, isn't it just a crime? We'd like to be unhappy, but we never do have the time.
While Assembly members continue to perform valuable constituency functions, it is clear that during any such interim period, they will not be performing the full range of their legislative functions. So, in parallel, I will take the steps necessary to reduce Assembly members' salaries. The reduction will take effect in two stages, commencing in November.
If you insist,
I do, by all means.
We never do have,
we never do have,
we never do, never do, never do, never do, never do have the time. Never do have the time.
Fair or unfair? You can let us know. 02890 333 105. I want to speak to DUP representative Gordon Lyons, MLA. Gordon, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Quite a suggestion here this morning, Gordon, that if the Secretary of State was going to announce the cut of salaries, the DUP suggested, well, do it when Jonathan Bale's at the RHI. Take the pressure off a wee bit. Is that true?
No, it's absolutely not. And I think there's a few people that have maybe spent too much time in the sun this summer if they're coming off with suggestions like that. Look, this was the first week back at the RHI inquiry after the summer. This was the first week back at Parliament, the first opportunity that Karen Bradley had to make this statement. And there's this is simply a coincidence. Some people will find that hard to believe, but that's just the way that it is.
How disappointed are you that she's actually cutting the salaries?
Well, what I'm actually more disappointed with is the fact that after all of this time, we still don't have a devolved government in place. That's what people in Northern Ireland want to see. That's what I ultimately want to see happen as well. And that's what we need to be working towards. But look, I fully understand the public frustration and anger that there is out there towards MLA's pay. And as the Secretary of State said, although we are still working and working full time at our constituency functions, we're not taking part in our legislative functions as much as I would like to be doing that. So I think it's understandable that pay is being reduced in these circumstances.
So you're not busy doing nothing?
Oh, no, absolutely not. And I think that perhaps the general public can think because we're not in the chamber at Stormont that we're not doing anything at all. That's certainly not the case. I've been dealing with hundreds of constituency cases over the last number of months. I have a full day today of meeting with community development organisations and council and different people that I meet with on a regular basis as I seek to represent my constituents. I'm still here. I'm still available to help people, to represent them, to lobby on their behalf. And there are still plenty of outside organisations and agencies that want to meet with us and to discuss policy and where we go from here. So absolutely, I would say that's the case for most MLAs, that we continue to be busy, continue to do this essential part of our job. But we're not doing the legislative function as much as we would like to. And so it's understandable that we don't get paid our full salary.
But took the Secretary of State quite a while to make this move. Obviously, the DUP had her ear and they must have had her under pressure not to cut the salaries.
Well, look, I understand that there was some things that needed to be ironed out in terms of pensions, and there was obviously legislation that needed to be brought in order for her to be able to do this. And But you know, we've made it very, very clear since the talks failed in February. Nigel Dodds had called it unsustainable for MLA pay to continue in this way. DUP MPs voted for the legislation, which allowed her to reduce pay, and we have said that this is understandable. So we haven't been standing in her way, but ultimately I don't believe that it should be for MLAs to decide their own pay. That's always been my view. I don't think any politicians should decide their own pay. That has been the way that it has been for quite some time. So ultimately it was up to her to make that decision. I think it's one that the public will understand and be content with.
Do you have much faith in Karen Bradley? Do you have the sort of belief that she is the woman for the job? It's a heck of an admission, isn't it, that she didn't know that unionists voted for unionists and nationalists voted for nationalists in Northern Ireland?
Yeah, well, obviously for anybody coming into Northern Ireland politics, it's a steep learning curve. And,
but that's pretty basic. That's like going to Windsor Park and being surprised that Rory Best isn't playing.
Well, look, as I say, steep learning curve. She came in. She has done her best in terms of getting up to speed with the issues. And I actually think that yesterday was a good announcement. And I actually think we saw some leadership yesterday from Karen Bradley. There is an issue with MLA pay. She has now sorted that out. It's time to get the parties around the table again. She's committed to doing that. She understands, as we've been saying for a long time, the decisions need to be taken in Northern Ireland. And she's going to explore ways in which that can be done. She's going to introduce legislation to make sure that an executive can be returned whenever the parties are in agreement. So we saw an awful lot of action yesterday, actually, from the Secretary of State. I welcome that. I think she's showing some leadership on it, and I hope that that continues.
And finally, this morning, Gordon, newspaper headlines hard to read for members of the DUP. Bell tells RHI inquiry he heard explicit details of DUP ministers' sexual misbehaviour. And another headline that says, a monster that had to be put to sleep. It's a hard old morning for the DUP?
Well, look, I don't want to comment on an ongoing inquiry, other than to say that we welcome the fact that this inquiry is taking place. We want the truth to come out. We believe that that will happen in the end, and we look forward to that report being published. Obviously, there are things that we can learn from that in terms of how the civil servants operates, how ministers operate, how Stormont in general works, and we're very open to making sure that we learn lessons and that Stormont becomes a better place because of that. But let's wait until we hear all of the evidence. Let's wait to see what the panel say before we even comment any further on that.
Okay, Gordon Lyons from the DUP, thank you very much indeed. We have other politicians who are going to be speaking to us as well. Sinn Féin weren't actually able to provide someone for a conversation, but this is what Conor Murphy had to say reacting to the salary announcement. As I say, no one from Sinn Féin was available to have a conversation with us.
I'll leave you to make your own judgment in relation to the timing of the statement this morning, but whatever about its competition with the ongoing events of the RHI inquiry, there's no doubt that the prospect, we think, of a court-ordered election has caused the British government to consider their relationship and their arrangement with the DUP in Westminster as opposed to their obligations to Good Friday Agreement, and yet again they have acted in the interests of their own survival. In relation to MLA pay, we had said many, many months ago that the pay should be reduced, that it was not sustainable or right to maintain full pay in the circumstances we had. We were not the cause of any delay in relation to that, and the Secretary of State will have to answer as to why it took her so long to come to this point when it was blatantly obvious that she should have done so long ago. It's very clear that decisions have been taken on a daily basis since the executive went down and the institutions went down. There's obviously a need for clarity in and around that. We would want to see things moved on like that. The victims who are waiting on a decision as a consequence of the historical abuse inquiry, and those things should be moved on. There should not have been a delay in dealing with that.
That's Conor Murphy from Sinn Féin speaking outside the Sinn Féin HQ. Good morning if you're just switching on the radio. It is 17 minutes past 9. I want to speak to Colin McGrath from the SDLP. I'm going to do that in just a moment. Colin McGrath from the SDLP is available. He's the chief whip of the party. Colin, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Are you going to be able to roll with this pay cut that's coming down the line?
Well, I think it's about time that we had this cut, because we've had so much inactivity for the past number of months. And whilst we're not doing this full role that we were elected to do, it is only right that we don't receive the full pay. The SDLP has been asking that for over a year now, because, you know, that's not what we're in the business to do, just simply take money and not complete the work. Now, balance that against the constituency services that we are providing. The fact, as you say, that I'm the chief whip, I certainly ensure that all of the SDLP are doing a minimum of 40 to 45 hours a week out in their constituencies and attending events, because ultimately we were elected. We do need to represent people. So the MLAs will be out doing that level of work. So a pay cut is, you know, it's about time that that happened, and down to a level that reflects the influence and the work that we're doing.
So what's next? Is an election a viable option, or would the SDLP get wiped at an election?
Well, I think the problem with elections, and the Secretary of State has accepted that it wouldn't change the situation. Elections, has to go back to a slight history lesson. The Good Friday Agreement suggested that in elections, after you had the result, that the First Minister would come from the largest designation and that the Deputy First Minister would come from the second or the other designation. When you go to St Andrews, that was changed to the biggest party in a designation and to the biggest party from the other designation. So it's no surprise that elections in Northern Ireland have turned into the parties going, if you don't vote for us, you'll get them. And I think that's a bit unfair, because it's turned elections into a sectarian headcount. It hasn't been about policy. It hasn't been about parties standing over their time in government. It hasn't been about how good a community is as a result of the work that the government has done. So we have this sort of false sense of government and democracy here in the North anyway, because all elections will be based on that simple line. If you don't come out and vote for me, you're going to get them. So I would like to see us move into a stage that that's not what elections are about, but we're not there yet. And as I said, the Secretary of State has taken elections off because she recognises, like most people, that an election will not change the result. It'll not deal with the issues. And what we need to sort out here are the issues, and then we need to get back in and do the job that we were elected to do.
And do you have faith in the Secretary of State with the admission that she didn't know the voting patterns in Northern Ireland?
Well, I think it's probably going to be one of those lines on hindsight that the Secretary of State is probably going to regret saying. But she probably was highlighting the fact that she didn't have an awful lot of knowledge or understanding of the nuances of the North before she came over. She was kind of sprung into the position, but it does maybe, if anything, it typifies what that backbench approach and backbench understanding in the House of Commons is to the situation and the different scenarios in the North. And as it stands, they are going to be the people that are actually going to be taking some of the key decisions about Northern Ireland, and yet it's going to be filled with benches of people that maybe don't have that full understanding. It's also regretful from our perspective that there's no nationalist voices there to be able to balance the simple 10 DUP voices that are going to be giving one side of the view. So there will be a lot of confusion and not an awful lot of voices there to be able to actually balance it out.
Do you get a sense that the Tories, and I know James Brokenshire took ill quite suddenly and is on his way to recovery, but because he had to step down at very short notice, that they really gave the job to the next person coming down the corridor? Is there a possibility that that's the way it works, that Northern Ireland isn't really on the agenda when you think of all the problems that they have across the water?
Well, I'll maybe say it wouldn't be fair to characterise it as just the next person to come down the corridor. Karen Bradley, I'm sure, is a very capable and able politician, but it was very short notice that she came in. She had a very short period of time to get over the brief. But if you reflect back to that time as well, Frank, remember, Theresa May is having to very finely balance her cabinet based on those that are pro-Brexit, those that are pro-Remain. And there are other issues within the Tory party and other issues within UK governance that she is having to balance whenever she brings somebody in to the cabinet. That's maybe easier whenever you're forming the cabinet and then whenever you're maybe doing a major reshuffle. But whenever just one position becomes available, there's probably a very small pool of those that are A, capable, and B, fit the character that needs to be around the cabinet table. But again, it does show you just how many issues are impacted in the North by issues that are impacting over in London and the UK. And that's why we need to have strong local voices. And it's why we need Stormont and the executive up and running. Now, I think Karen Bradley has an opportunity. She has said that she will bring people around the table. But if she was able to legislate, or she's going to legislate in October, for all of the things that she mentioned yesterday, why didn't she simply legislate for an Irish Language Act and a reform of the petition of concern? And by the end of October, all the issues would be off the table and we could get back to work.
Well, I see a guy called Gary saying that the only wages that should be cut are those of Sinn Féin and the DUP, because after all, they are the ones holding us back. So that leads me to a very obvious question to you, Colin. If you were the largest nationalist party, would you go back? Would you go back? Would the SDLP go back without any red lines at all?
Well, I think, first of all, if there's something that the last year has taught us, is that red lines and discussing them in the public domain are not helpful. What we have said right over the last year and what we have offered to do was to participate in any of the negotiations that were there, but we weren't invited. And it's in the negotiations, if you go back to the Good Friday Agreement, if you go back to any of the various nuances of that that took place over the years, there were negotiations with all the players around the table. You trade a bit here, you trade a bit there, you accept a bit in the other places. We know what we would like to go in and achieve, but there's no point in announcing that before you go into the table, because all your cards are on the table and you've nothing to negotiate. But, you know, we would like to think that we would be able to deliver a package of resolutions that would be welcome to most people in the North.
Yeah, but would you go back without an Irish Language Act? Because Karen Bradley's not going to deliver that. The DUP are negotiating with her constantly, so she's not going to legislate for an Irish Language Act. So would the SDLP go back without an Irish Language Act?
Well, as I say, that would form part of the negotiations, because an Irish Language Act is several words, but there are very, very many different meanings to it. And I think what has happened is that it's become toxic as an issue. And we would like to work to demystify that, because there's probably a lot of unionists that would say never, never, never to an Irish Language Act. But if it was actually sat down and explained what it was, if there was a discussion about what it would contain, if there was a discussion about how it would be implemented, that a lot of unionists would find that they have very little to fear from it. But because it's turned into this toxic issue, it is presented as that red line issue, will you, won't you? It is forcing a lot of people to say no. That's the sort of things that should be taking place in negotiations. It's delivering an Irish Language Act that is acceptable and you know, everyone can agree to it, because it isn't an issue that's toxic. There is legislation. We hear from unionists regularly about how there has to be parity of esteem right across the whole of the UK, but yet you've got a Scottish Language Act, you've got Welsh Language Act. So there is a lot to discuss, and those discussions are best placed around the table. But of course, if you changed, Frank, the petition of concern, if you actually amended the petition of concern that it couldn't be used for political reasons, it needed to be used for other reasons, very safeguarding reasons, that would be, you know, there would be a package of reasons that it could be used for, that would unlock it, because then it would be a democratic vote on the floor of the Assembly. And I'm confident that in those instances, an Irish Language Act would succeed.
Okay, one final question to you about the nuts and bolts of a pay cut. And I'm going to put this to Robin Swan as well, who's coming on to speak to us. At a personal level for some politicians, will that significant pay cut make it difficult for some MLAs? Some are better heeled than others. Some came away from decent jobs to give their time to the community. Will this pay cut make it difficult for them to make ends meet?
That's a very difficult question to answer, because, as you say, every individual MLA has individual circumstances. I suppose the main difficulty with any pay packet that you get is that you do get used to getting it, and therefore you build your life around that if there is a substantial change. And we are only going to be facing what many, many people have had to face out in the community, where they've lost jobs and maybe have had to transfer into other posts where they get paid less. You do need to make changes to your monthly outgoings. Now, if you've a family, if you've got children, if you've got you know, a house to support, cars to run, and various other items to do, that will be difficult. Others, like myself, I'm single. It's not such a big issue. But the one thing that is important, I think, is that you will find it hard to find an MLA that is going into the job just for the money. They do it right across the house, to actually get into their communities, to work hard, to deliver for local people. If they were simply in it for the money, they probably would be able to find other ways with better security in the post to be able to get the money. So I don't think that that will be a massive issue. It'll be tough. People will have to belt down. But hopefully, if we can get the government sorted out, get it up and running and have the executive, it'll not be implemented. But it's not the motivation for doing the work. I know certainly I took a pay cut to come into the Assembly. So a further pay cut, you just got to roll with it.
Okay, thank you very much. Colin McGrath is the SDLP's chief whip, taking a pay cut to come into the Assembly and now getting an even bigger pay cut probably to continue in the Assembly. Robin Swan is the leader of the Ulster Unionists. Robin Swan, good morning.
Morning, Frank.
Just before I get to the politics of it, is there a human side to a pay cut, or are salaries so handsome that actually everyone's going to do all right?
No, there is a human side to the pay cut, but I think, actually, as Colin was saying there, the majority of MLAs I think went into the job for the human side, and that's to be able to help constituencies, to help people and actually do the work that we want to do as politicians. So, look, I can look across the Ulster Unionist Party and our Assembly team and say, look, there's no career politicians or career MLAs sitting on our benches or in our party that are there solely for the money. It's not the job you would go into if you were solely interested in the money that it pays. There will be individual MLAs, I'm sure, across all parties who will have to adjust lifestyles to suit the salary that they will be reduced to. And that's nature. Unfortunately, I represent North Antrim here, Frank. We lost JTI, we lost Gallagher's, we lost Michelin. What MLAs are being asked to face now is nothing compared to what those families faced when those large industries and those large job numbers were lost here in North Antrim.
Okay, Robin Swan, as far as the human side of it's concerned, I'm looking at a few texts and emails that are coming through. I'll get to those a little bit later in the programme, because, you know, some people have great sympathy for politicians and others have none whatsoever. But I didn't bring these texts to the previous politicians who I'd on, so I'll not bring them to you either, but we'll deal with them as the programme goes by. Now, the civil servants are going to be getting more powers. Karen Bradley's not going to have an election. Would you like to see an election?
Look, I would agree with her to an extent that an election at this moment in time wouldn't solve the problems that are there. I think that actually if we went to an election right now, we'd be looking at a further sectarianisation of Northern Ireland and the voting patterns that we've seen, unfortunately. And I think that goes back to the point that Colin touched on in regard to the St Andrews Agreement and how the Belfast Agreement was changed in that. And the elections in Northern Ireland that we've seen over the last two haven't been fought on policies or principles. And I think that's where we need to get into a space to go. But the change that the proposal that the Secretary of State has actually brought forward, that she's going to limit or remove or not allow elections, I think it is, for a limited and prescribed period. She needs to be careful in the prescription of that period, because if she says she's not going to have an election for the next 6 months, she's actually indicating there will be an election in 6 months, or she's going to, face a legal challenge on that. There is the cynics out there who actually think this statement isn't about restoration of an assembly in Northern Ireland, but it's more to protect her and the Northern Ireland office from the judicial review that's coming either next week or next week or the following week.
Yeah, this is a victim of historical institutional abuse who's won the right for a full judicial review of the Northern Ireland Secretary and Executive Office's failure to implement the financial redress or the compensation scheme. And there's certainly a call within that an election might be the way forward.
Well, and that's that will be part of I suppose, that legal discussion, legal debate. So there's the cynics out there who think this statement of postponing an election or not allowing an election is actually more to get them out of that hole than it is about the restoration of an executive or an assembly in Northern Ireland. So, you know, the devil will be in the detail. We'll actually see when we meet her next week to see what exactly she is proposing.
And what about these civil servants? What about the decision-making power of the civil servants? Because that has very much been in the spotlight over the last 6 months or so.
Look, Frank, I don't think anybody would argue that we don't need decisions made in Northern Ireland. My concerns about simply giving decision-making processes to civil servants is that there is no scrutiny, there is no oversight of those decisions. Now, And even if that's done in Westminster, even if it could be done in some sort of form here, I think that would be beneficial. But I think even civil servants would be reluctant to start to take decisions without that formal scrutiny, because it gives them a level of cover in the decision-making process they have. And all you have to do is look at the current inquiry in RHI at this minute in time that's ongoing. You know, so to give civil servants a carte blanche where they can go around making decisions that won't be challenged in the future, I don't think is fair or reasonable. But again, in the statement the Secretary of State made yesterday, she didn't go into any detail in that. You know, and she said it was going to give greater clarity and certainty, but the statement didn't do that. So we need to see exactly how she proposes bringing forward legislation to allow civil servants to make decisions. I see a need. I think there's definitely a need that there has to be political scrutiny and oversight.
Well, certainly the word limbo's coming up here time and again with people who are sending us texts. We don't seem to be much further forward, but we'll keep a careful and watchful eye on it all. Robin Swan, leader of the Ulster Unionists, thank you for your time this morning. Thank you very much. Good morning to you. 90333105 is the best number to get us on. Your opinions are very welcome indeed. 02890333105. Bill, Teresa and Tanya are all saying that the putting of the music to the commentary from the Secretary of State is totally unacceptable. Have you any idea, Frank, what indeed MLAs do and how much time they give to their constituents? If you've sort of joined us late and you haven't heard that wee bit of music, I might have to remind people of what we did earlier on. But Robert has a point that he wants to make. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning, Frank. I heard you talking to the DUP representative saying, is it not coincidental that the Secretary of State made it with Jonathan Bell, the Renewable Heating Inquiry? And he made a rash thing saying people spent too much time in the sun. Well, for him to say that, the majority of people in this country hadn't 20 months to spend their time in the sun. Frank, it's no big deal. Their salaries have been reduced right down to 35 grand. The majority of people in this country are not earning 35 grand. There's over 10,000 taxi drivers in this country are not earning nowhere near 35 grand. And they're doing between 60 and 80 hours a week, Frank.
Yes, but Robert, hold on, Robert. If you're earning whatever it is, 47, and you get it cut to 36, I haven't the figures directly in front of me here, but the first slice is going to be, I think, 7.5 grand, and then there's another slice coming along. Eventually, you're going to lose about 11 grand out of your salary. If you're in the 40s and you lose 10 or 11, it's a brave old whack.
It may be a bit of a whack, Frank, but they're not working, Frank. You know, why don't they join the unemployment ranks? Because they're not working, Frank.
But are they not working, Robert? They're not carrying out their legislative duties, but they are working. Surely they're working. This is why people are complaining that we introduced Karen Bradley with music this morning, because people are now beginning to stand up for their politicians and say they are working.
Well, Frank, another thing about Karen Bradley, I disagree with Robin Swan. I truthfully, honestly do believe that the people here are crying out for another election. And I believe the two big power bases will lose thousands and thousands of voters, because the people are fed up their back teeth that these politicians have not got their act together. They've been on full salaries for the past 20 months, and it's no big deal getting their salaries reduced to 35 grand when the majority of people in this country are not earning 35 grand. Also, Frank, we're under Westminster rule, because I'll tell you why we're under Westminster rule. The civil servants, the Secretary of State is going to legislate to civil servants to have all the powers to carry out the duties that in the absence of the ministers. So indirectly, we're under Westminster rule as we speak, Frank.
Okay, Robert, indirectly, we're under direct rule. Right, okay, that's Robert's take on it. What do you think? You can let us know, 02890-333-105. And if there was an election, Robert says the other parties would come through and the two big parties would be punished by the electorate. Or would they? This is Northern Ireland, remember. Would there not be, I'm going to be green or I'm going to be more orange? And the bigger parties would excel and take all the seats and we'd be where we are at this moment in time. 02890-333-105. Jeepers, you're going hard at me here with putting music to the Secretary of State. We'll remind you what we did after this. Bill has been listening to the discussion so far this morning. He has a point that he would like to make on the programme. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Frank. My point I want to make is they've been doing nothing with such. Well, they've been out of government for 18 months, but it's going to take them another 2 months to start the process of cutting their wages. It's going to be October, I think they said, September, October, November maybe, and then another 8 weeks after that before they take the other payment. But surely it should have been carried out today. You know, the payment should have been, right, your wages are cut to £13,000 from today. Why the delay in doing so?
Well, I presume that's called an incentive. If you are going to implement something, this is last chance saloon. This is an encouragement for them in the early months of autumn to get back to the talks and to get back into the executive.
Exactly, that's it, Frank. It's a shot across the bow, really. That's the way I interpreted it myself when I heard it. But at the end of the day, if they don't, we're just going to go down the line again, down the line again. What you said earlier is correct. The two big parties go to the election, no change, back in, have another year of it or whatever, and what happens? Everybody else is suffering. Even the financial part of it for the MLAs, I mean, what, 50,000 a year? At 13,000, they've already got, what, £75,000 of payment there for swanning around. I mean, if we take a day off, take a day off work. Self-employed people do the same, they take a day off. Nobody gives them as money.
But are they swanning around, Bill? Is this fair? Because this is why people are complaining about the music we put to the Secretary of State this morning. Is it fair to suggest that MLAs are busy doing nothing?
Well, then do it pro rata, Frank. Do it pro rata for what they are doing. Don't give them something for... I mean, they're not going to Stormont. They're not working up there. So they're doing in their offices, doing local work with the local people. Yeah, fair enough. They're entitled to a payment of some sort. But it should go pro rata on what they're actually putting out there. You know, and the point they're making so clearly there is the people here are suffering all the time. It's not a case of the finance. You know, we keep going on to the finance and what they've lost. It's that people have lost their opportunities of appointments and other things. And actually, the court case that's actually prompted this is a fine example. The people need things done. They can't sit about and wait forever and ever because two parties can't sit down. And actually an assembly, not just the two parties. They have to sit together. Everyone has to have a say here.
Okay, Bill, thank you very much indeed. I'm just looking at some of the comments. You were criticising the idea of the music being so flippant in relation to what Karen Bradley was saying. But then there are other people who are saying things like this. Really loved your choice of music, Karen Bradley's platitudes. The only thing that could be better would be Puppet on a String, says Una. And this one says, I thought the music was a cracker, Frank. It explains exactly what issues that matter. Well done, says Jackie from Lurgan. And another person, Teresa was criticising, Tanya was criticising as well. It's Elaine who's saying, great choice of music. It absolutely sums it up. And since that, in the last 10 minutes we were talking about the music that was played at 9:05, some of you are saying, I wasn't listening at the beginning. Tell us, what was it that you played? Okay, well, at the risk of offending some of you who really believe that the MLAs have been working their backsides off and deserve every penny they can get, or indeed deserve at least a good, decent wage, at the risk of offending you guys who feel like that, here's just a reminder of what Karen Bradley had to say and the music that was put to it that seemed appropriate at the time.
Northern Ireland needs devolved government. It needs all the functioning political institutions of the Belfast Agreement and its successors.
La, la, la. We're busy doing nothing, working the whole day through, trying to to find lots of things not to do.
As this impasse continues, the people of Northern Ireland are suffering. Local decision making is urgently needed to address this. The only sustainable way forward lies in stable, fully functioning and inclusive devolved government.
Busy going nowhere, isn't it just a crime? We'd like to be unhappy, but we never do have the time.
While Assembly members continue to perform valuable constituency functions, it is clear that during any such interim period, they will not be performing the full range of their legislative functions. So, in parallel, I will take the steps necessary to reduce Assembly members' salaries. The reduction will take effect in two stages, commencing in November.
If you insist,
I do, by all means.
Never do have the time.
I think it's okay. And we do accept that the people who are described as the members of the Legislative Assembly, they do some work. They're not all lying in their bed at this present minute in time. But I'm sure some of them get a lie on. They're bound to. But there's work being done, and we're often reminded of it, not only by the MLAs themselves, but by some of their constituents. Right. 90 33 105 077 66 105 105. Frank, if you didn't do your work, would your boss pay you? But it's not as simple as that, is it? You know, because a lot of MLAs could arrive up to Stormont every day of the week, and there's nothing happening up there. You know, if I came in and the microphones were all switched off and I was prepared to sit down and work at them, well, if my boss had everything sort of mothballed, then he couldn't really blame me. And some of the MLAs are prepared to go and work. As a matter of fact, they're all arguing that they're prepared to go and work. Right, 0289 033 105. Dialing banjos would be appropriate in this backward state, says Jack the Roofer. I'll have to dig that one out just to see exactly what it is, Jack. I hope it's family appropriate. I haven't a clue. And loads of you are remarking on the amount of money. You think that the salary level for an MLA is relatively high. You think that they are handsomely paid, and the pay structure that has been put in place by the independent grouping is generous.